You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley. And being the... what's happened here? Oh, no, sorry. Something just went here. Due to being the second Wednesday of the month, at 12 o'clock, we have our legal team from Hutchison Legal. And with us today, we have Jason, who we've had before, and we've got Helen Byshire. How are you two? Hang on.
Well, on this glorious morning in the Yarra Valley. Great to be with you. Yeah,
great.
Lovely to be with you, Alan.
And Helen, this is your first time, isn't it?
It is, Alan. So very exciting.
If you make it today with us, well, you seem to keep on going. all right, let's get right into it. Last time we sent your way, we had a question from a listener. And I should just quickly mention, if anybody's got an aspect of the law they want to answered, give us a ring on 59 615 9915 9915 9915. You have to do it fairly quickly. We only have them for the hour, and the hour goes very quickly, and we'll put it to them and we'll test their knowledge, which I know they won't. They'll come right through. Anyway,
it's always fun.
The question we had last time was, what can a sheriff take, and I guess what can't he take? Who's going to answer?
I will take this one, Alan.
Go for it.
So it's a good question. So sheriffs actually have the authority to take non-secured items from your home or from your business, which is interesting. So they can go to a shop front if you have a shop. So non-secured items are valuable things you own outright. For example, your car. Things they can't take. Well, actually, sheriffs have limits, so they can't take items which require you to live in, or you need to live in, basic comfort. So things like your fridge, your TV, your washing machine, and they can't actually take your car if it's your primary mode of transport as well. So it's good that there are boundaries and limits to what they can take, but they actually can take other items don't actually require.
So they can't take beds, kitchen tables and chairs and couches. And what about a TV? Is that considered an essential or not?
Yeah, actually, interesting enough, TVs are considered a basic item of comfort.
It's a basic human right, Ellen.
Well, it is to a lot of people, particularly during lockdown anyway, isn't it?
This is true. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's good for that listener who asked. We've got another question for you to take away. We do have some listeners that really have some very intriguing questions, so the one today will be a good one. But anyway, Jason, you're well into the wills and power of attorneys and all that sort of stuff, so I guess the first thing we want to talk about is enduring power of attorneys. And if any of my kids are listening, you're not getting it for a long while, because I want to decide where I'm going, not you. But anyway.
That's exactly right. It's a great topic to discuss, Alan. And in fact, many of the questions that your listeners do bring up, they are interesting because they touch on all of us. That's the point of the law. It does affect us all. Yep. It's directly relevant in some way or another. And so today's topic is definitely one of those which is relevant to everybody. The relevance is, what we're talking about is enduring powers of attorney, and they're important to make sure that you've got the care and support you need from whom you need it, when you need it. When you need it. That's exactly right. And the whole challenge is that if you do them wrong, it can create issues of elder abuse. It can create conflict. It can create all kinds of problems and headaches. Whereas if you do it right, it can make life very, very different. And so there are three main areas. And what we propose this morning is we're going to chat through briefly what those areas are and how they work. And then towards the end, we'll talk about how they interact with this issue of elder abuse, because it is a common one.
Jason, can I just ask one question before we get down further?
Absolutely.
When we're talking of power of attorney, is it suggested that you only give it to one person or more than one in your family? Because could that cause conflict? One says, well, they should go into an all-purpose home, and the other one says no, or whatever.
definitely. The answer to the question is probably yes.
but which question?
and it really comes down to the situation and the unique circumstances of the individual. So in some situations, you'd say definitely, just make it one person. In some situations, you'd say absolutely no way should you only have the one. And some of the factors and the considerations are other things we'll talk about this morning. So the first area of decision-making is, well, the three main areas, I'll identify them briefly, the medical decisions, financial decisions, and the personal decisions. And so the medical decisions used to be what we would call the medical power of attorney. They're now called medical treatment decision makers. Yeah, that's progress for you. It really rolls off the tongue. But that's what they're called now. And they're the decisions about your medical treatment. That's giving instructions to doctors and consent for surgical procedures and in an end-of-life situation, saying whether treatment's going to be continued or withheld. And that's when you're talking about life support machines and whether to turn them off, those kinds of things.
Jason, supposing you gave the power of attorney, this enduring power of attorney, to one of your children, we'll say, and they say, all right, we'll turn the machines off, and you've got another one or two saying, no, can they override? They can't override the power of attorney, can they?
Not outright, no. The whole point of the medical decision maker appointment is that it authorises that person to make those decisions. There is a process for review, and they, if they wanted to, they could take legal proceedings to try to have that review, that decision questioned, reevaluated. But it's a difficult thing to do, and it's not common that happens. And so that's where the choice of appointment is so critically important. Issues can arise, like you say, in that very situation. And so with the medical treatment decision makers, you can only ever appoint one person at a time. So with that comment you had earlier about whether they have more than one, for medical decisions, and only for medical decisions, you can only appoint one person at a time simply because they don't want a situation that the doctors have two people saying different things and they've got to try to figure out who's right and who's not. With the medical treatment decisions, there are some other flexible options for making decisions. Helen, why don't you talk us through those?
Yeah, sure. So with the medical decision makers, you can actually also elect to have a document in place called Advanced Care Directives. And so there are two parts to that document. You can have instructional directives, which basically gives your healthcare team, your family members, your medical decision maker a clear instructions on what you'd like done in terms of medical treatments. It also includes limits on what you would not like to have done in certain circumstances. You can also have like a values-based directive, which kind of gives an overview of your views on certain things, ethical concerns you have, if you have religious or cultural requirements as well. So that's a document that you can have as well, which is helpful.
Yeah. And if you don't want to be resuscitated, you'd put that in that document, would you?
Yes, yeah. That's something you would put into a document like that, yeah.
Look, I've just got to take a quick break. With the sponsor, the people that pay to keep us on air, and you'll be surprised when the first, well, might not be surprised when the first one pops up. We'll just take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
Must have been love, but it's all.
To Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to Community Connections with Alan Collier. And as I said before, if you've got a question you want answered, you'd better ring pretty quickly, but we'll put it to them, and I'm sure we won't be able to bluff them, they'll know. So give us a ring on 59-615-991, 59-615-991. Now, we're talking about powers of attorney, and Helen was telling us about advanced care directives, but there's also another one called support persons.
Yeah, that's right. And so with the medical decision-making power, you can appoint someone who, they may not actually be making decisions for you, but they are able to assist you. They're called a supportive person, and they can help you get information, and they're legally authorised to do that. So if you needed someone to be able to talk to the doctors, talk to the hospital, get the information, but not actually make the decisions on your behalf, that might be helpful.
Right. So they don't have to have any medical experience or anything. You can just have them, like it could be one of your children or something.
Yeah, that's correct, Alan. Yeah, they don't have to have any medical knowledge or anything like that. They just need to be someone that knows you, your values, someone that you can trust, because they'll be able to access information that's pretty personal. But yeah, like Jason said, they actually can't make decisions on your behalf, but they can assist you in making decisions.
Right. Now, apart from medical, there's also other powers of attorneys too, aren't there?
That's exactly right. And so the other areas are the financial and personal decisions. The financial enduring power of attorney, it's easy to think of as the person who can do the banking for you and can deal with Centrelink and can make many sort of legal decisions dealing with property and investments and so forth. The personal decisions are a little bit different. They relate more to care arrangements, decisions about where you live and who you live with and if you had to be in a care facility, which one. And so you can appoint people to have those both roles, or you can have different people for different roles. And these are really important. One of the issues is that if you don't have these, if you don't have these in place, it can be an incredible inconvenience to your family. What would happen is if, it's a situation I'm dealing with at the moment, the husband has had a stroke and his wife needs to access some of the investments which are in his name only. She does not have an enduring power of attorney, and so she has to apply to VCAT. She has to go to a tribunal hearing, get appointed as his administrator, and then every year moving forward, she has to provide full financial statements of how she's used, quote, his money, and provide receipts and get audited from time to time. It's a really huge burden for a couple who are still married and very much together.
And I guess the problem is too, like, you're not going to get into VCAT in the first month, are you? And
meanwhile, that's exactly right.
Meanwhile, all these costs go on.
That's exactly right. The other issue can be you don't actually have any say over who gets appointed. So it could be that someone you want would be appointed, but maybe it's someone you wouldn't want ends up being appointed. It could be that state trustees or someone else gets appointed, or a family member that you wouldn't choose to have managing your affairs. So by appointing an enduring power of attorney while you're able to do so, you avoid that entire scenario, and it means that you have control over who's going to be making decisions on your behalf.
Well, supposing you give an enduring power of attorney to someone while you've still got all your faculties, but you might want to give up the medical and the financial. So what would happen then? If you've appointed someone, and then and you're saying, yeah, but I don't want this to, while I'm still able to, I want to do this. So can your power of attorney override your own decisions?
Well, first of all, Alan, actually, in your power of attorney, there are three things that you can kind of choose for when your power of attorney starts. So you can choose for the effect to happen immediately when you sign the power of attorney. You can choose for when you have lost capacity to make decisions under the definition of the Act, or you can actually choose for when a doctor certifies you incapable of making decisions. So in this kind of scenario, it depends on when the actual authority to the power of attorney has been given. So if they currently have a power of attorney when they're able to make decisions and they've ticked kind of that first option of the power of attorney has authority to act as soon as I sign this document, and they do have authority to act, well, then you could also do a few things. You could, revoke that power of attorney, or you could amend your power of attorney. So that's just a process that you can do as well.
Obviously, it's best to do these power of attorneys while you've got all your senses about you, isn't it? But you may not want them to pop in straight away.
Correct. And so you can actually set any conditions that you want to say this power of attorney will not take effect until this particular event has occurred or these circumstances have arisen. And so there's a lot of flexibility there. And so that's the whole point. Most people do implement them so that they only take effect if they no longer are able to make decisions for themselves. And in that sense, they're very much like an insurance policy that you have there just in case.
Because you can understand, couldn't you, that, like, none of us know if you're going to have a stroke or something and it happens overnight and all of a sudden your wishes aren't known. But while you're still walking around, you want to make your own decisions.
That's right, exactly right. And so that's very much the reason these documents exist, and they're put there so that you can have some control over, yeah, exactly what will happen afterwards. Because of the way these documents are structured, there's actually a fair bit of flexibility. And so you can appoint, and this comes to your question of earlier, you can appoint one person to be an attorney and have other people as backups or alternates. You can appoint more than one person and say these people have to act together. And sometimes it will be really appropriate to just have one person. If, for example, you would expect conflict between your family members and you expect that the people you might like to appoint wouldn't agree, then it might be a good idea just to appoint one person with the power to make decisions. Frequently for a husband and wife, for example, they'll appoint just one another in the first instance. In some situations, though, it's better to have more than one person. They can provide accountability if you say that they have to make every decision together. That means that you don't have one person running off and doing their own thing. It can also provide some support. Often being an attorney for a loved one is a pretty significant responsibility, and if it's a role that has to carry on for a number of years, it can be exhausting. So having more than one person can be a really practical way of providing support to the family.
All right, look, I just need to take another quick break and we'll be back with more.
You can't touch this. You can't touch this. You can't touch this. Touch this. My music hit me so hard, makes me say, oh my Lord, thank you for blessing me with a mind to run and do like me. It feels good when you know you're down. A
can't touch this. Yeah, that's how we living and you know you can't touch this. Look in my eyes, man, you can't touch this. Yo, let me bust the funky lyrics. Can't touch this. Fresh new kicks and bands, you got it like that. Now you know you wanna dance, so move out of your seat and get a fly girl and catch this beat while it's rolling. Hold on, pump a little bit and let the noise go on like that. Like that. Pull a little bit, just don't fall on back. Let them know that you're too much and this is a beat they can't touch. Yo, I told you, you can't touch this. Why you standing there, man? You can't touch this. Yo, sound the bell. School is in, sucker. You can't touch this. Give me a song, a rhythm, making them sweat. That's what I'm giving them now. They know. You're talking about the hammer. You're talking about a show that's hot and tight. Singles are sweating, so fast them a white or a tape. To learn what's it gonna take in the 90s to burn the charts. Legit. Either work hard or you might as well quit. That word, because you know. You can't touch this. Can't touch this. Break it down. Stop. Hammer time. Go with the flow. It is said if you can't groove the list, you probably are dead. So wave your hands in the air. Bust a few moves. Run your fingers through your hair. This is it. For a winner, dance to this. And you're gonna get there. Can't touch this. Look, man, can't touch this. You better get hyped, boy, cause you know you can't touch this. Ring the bell, school's back in. Break it down. Stop, have a time. Touch this. You can't touch this. You can't touch this. Break it down. Stop. Hammer time. Every time you see me, the hammer's just so hype.
You're listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley, where it's 20 minutes to one. The time goes quick when we've got these legal people in, and we've gone up another degree. We're at 18, chasing 19. Jason, you want to talk about some of the options people have with these power of attorneys?
That's exactly right, because they are really flexible documents and can really be tailored to suit individual circumstances. We spoke of the financial and the personal decisions that you can appoint someone to make on your behalf if you're unable to or in whatever circumstances. There's another role, however, which is not so commonly known, and that's the role of the supportive person. This is a role where you can appoint someone to assist you, to support you in decision making, and you can empower them to get information on your behalf, but not actually make decisions. And so if you had a listener who was largely housebound, who was unable to get out and about, but still very much able to make their own decisions, they might be assisted by a supportive person who's authorised to go to the bank and get information and get statements, who's authorised to call Centrelink and make arrangements, to find out information and to assist, while the individual themselves retains absolute decision-making control. The other aspect of powers of attorney is that they can be crafted and tailored and limited in particular ways. And so sometimes we'll have people who say, I'll authorise my attorney to make any decisions about X, Y, and Z, but not this. They can't do that. So they're limited in some way. They might be limited to transactions under $5,000, for example. Or it might be an appointment that says, I'll appoint these three people and any two of them are able to make decisions on my behalf. So if people have a circumstance or a situation that they are concerned about or trying to figure out how to address, I would encourage them to have a chat with a lawyer about the options that are available. These documents are designed to be tailored and crafted to fit individual requirements, and it certainly shouldn't be addressed with a just sort of one-size-fits-all approach.
Jason, is there any issues that people should be careful of if they're doing these power of attorneys?
There certainly are. There are two great considerations that we always recommend people think about. The first is the ability of the people you're appointing to make decisions on your behalf. If they're terrible with their finance, you probably don't want them dealing with yours. Are they going to be available? Are they going to be able to make the decisions you need them to make? That's the first consideration. The second consideration is the risk factor that's involved. And that really leads us to our next point, because, you know, you'll hear it in the news every couple of months. There'll be a story of elder abuse, which can come with powers of attorney. In fact, you know, some of the statistics that are around are quite horrible, the prevalence of elder abuse in the community.
Yeah, so the Australian, I think, Institute of Family Studies says that about 2 to 14% of prevalence of elder abuse in our country, which is very sad to hear.
That's terrible.
So, yeah, especially.
And they're very often by family too, aren't they?
Yeah, that's true. Very often by family members. So it's very hard to hear that elderly people, when they're the most vulnerable, they can be taken advantage of. So this kind of elder abuse can occur when you have a power of attorney who takes advantage, for instance, by maybe drawing out bank account, sums out of your bank account, which you don't know about, that kind of thing. And I think it happens mainly because there's actually not much accountability for powers of attorneys. It's very hard to police things that happen behind closed doors and that kind of thing. So,
Yeah, all right. Look, I've just got to take one quick break, and then I want to come back and we'll keep going on this. But before I do, if one of you could have a pen, and I'd like to give you what we need the people to come back next time, please.
We can't wait.
Yarra Valley FM acknowledges the traditional owners, the Wurundjeri people, as the custodians of this land we broadcast from. We pay respects to elders past, present, and emerging.
scrapes and gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley. And we've got our experts on, our legal experts, as they come in every the second week of every month between 12 and 1. Right, so we've had two questions come in for us for answer for next time. So has someone got a pen and Helen's going to write them down, is she?
We're ready to go.
Righto. Now, righto. First of all, the first person wants to know about parole. Now, we know that there's been some controversial decisions made about parole, and what the first listener wants to know is what conditions a judge, or it's not a judge makes a decision about whether they get parole or not, is it? It goes to the parole board, am I right?
Yes, that's correct. So in the sentencing, the sentencing judge may say that there's a minimum sentence that must be served without parole, and then whether they get parole or not will be the decision of the parole board, correct?
Right. So the first person wants to know what conditions that parole board has to look at.
That's a great question.
There must be a whole lot of things that they just don't decide, yeah, I can do that. So that's the first question.
Great.
The second, which it's strange, we'll often get various things, but it's strange. Often we get, or no, well, not so often, but it happens every now and again, we get two people asking about the same sort of thing.
Sounds like a conspiracy to me.
Well, it does. But anyway, I accept them. We don't
absolutely.
We don't try and pick and choose the ones we want to answer or not. The other one is, if a judge says the minimum, not so much a minimum sentence, which you've just said, but every now and again that the judge will say there's a non-parole period.
Yes.
Right. So what we want to know is, first of all, does that mean that the person has to serve the full length of their sentence? And if not, like if there is a non-parole period, and that may be the whole length of the sentence, can that be overridden by the parole board?
Also a good question.
I don't know.
Tune in next month for the answers.
and you're not the end thinking, thank goodness I don't have to come up with the answers.
Correct.
Righto. Now, let's get back to our enduring power of attorneys. You have said that it can create for elder abuse.
That's right.
And I heard, an ad somewhere where someone was saying, or heard it somewhere, a woman was saying that if she didn't change her will to give money to her daughter, she was never going to see her grandchildren again. Well, I'd be telling her to hoof it off anyway. But anyway, that's just me. But you say that they can prevent elder abuse. So how would that happen, please?
Yeah, exactly. And that's a good point, because elder abuse can come in all shapes and sizes.
Hmm. So elder abuse can look very different. So it can be physical, emotional, financial, which I mentioned before. It can be sexual. And neglect also counts as elder abuse as well. Often it is a criminal offence to abuse your position as a power of attorney because it's often undetected and unreported. So prevalence is hard to gauge because so much of it does go unreported.
One of the issues can be, as you just said, Alan, that sometimes people might even know that they're being taken advantage of, but they're just feeling vulnerable and unable to do anything about it. And so this is where sometimes if you appoint the wrong people as your attorney, they will take advantage of it and misuse it and can then abuse the family member or loved one. I'm dealing with any number of matters at any given time where up to $150,000 has been drained from bank accounts and things like that. But at the same time, appointing the right people can protect you from that abuse. And it might be about having more than one person and having that accountability. Or it might be about limiting their power and decision-making to certain types of decisions or certain value transactions. And this is where if careful thought is given to the power of attorney, it can really help. I've had people who didn't really have family members involved. And so giving careful thought to who they wanted meant that they had an attorney appointed. They had no family to step in, but they did have someone, a friend, who was legally or able to step in. And when situations at the nursing home went poorly and they weren't receiving the treatment and care they should have been receiving, this friend had the legal authority to step in and do something about it. And so having a careful conversation with someone who can advise you and walk you through and give you a solution which fits your situation can make the world of difference in those situations.
And very often the people, particularly if they're in a home or you know, they're getting quite old, they're probably at their most vulnerable time, aren't they?
Absolutely. And that's the challenge. They feel helpless. They can't communicate. They're isolated. I've had clients who their hearing is declining. They're losing their eyesight. They can't read documents. They're just incredibly vulnerable. And so unless they have already made arrangements for there to be someone in their corner who will stick up for them and look out for their interests, they're really isolated.
What in the case, and I know that I'm being the devil advocate here.
You do it well.
Well, I try not to, but I try to glean as much information as we can. So you supply or you appoint somebody as a power of attorney before something happens to them and you're no longer in a position, we'll say you've slipped into dementia or something, so you've got your power of attorney, something happens to them. Is there a progression or what happens in that situation?
Yes, and we would always recommend that clients appoint more than one person, even if it's in layers of alternates, so that there is a backup, so that there's a contingency plan. In a worst case scenario, if you know you've appointed any number of people and none of them are able to assist, there are avenues to appeal to apply to VCAT, to have other people appointed. But
hang on, let's go back a stage.
Yes.
You're not in the position to do that. You don't know.
That's correct. So you could have other family members step in and ask VCAT to get involved, or in some situations a social worker might step in or nursing home might ask someone to get involved. So that there is a mechanism whereby, you know, at worst case scenario, if there's no one else, state trustees or someone like that might be appointed to make decisions for your care. But good planning means that shouldn't normally be necessary, and some careful thought ahead of time can eliminate many of those situations.
All right, so I don't want to be putting anybody down in any way, but I know people like state trustees and they get paid, and they get paid quite well because that's their job. Can a power of attorney take any money for their work, or is it just totally free?
The default position is that they're not entitled to payment. In some situations, people might authorise payment, and that can be part of the discussion when you're making the power of attorney. Or in some situations, the attorney might actually apply to VCAT for approval to receive payment, but they would be very unusual situations. Generally, it is a labour of love for a family member or close friend, and people are willing to do that for them.
All right, so I'll throw one more question in just to cause a bit of trouble. No, that's not true. But can a person decline? Of course they can decline. But if a person, say somebody asked me today to be their power of attorney, what should I consider before I just jump in and say, oh, yeah, I'll do it?
Yeah, that's a great question. Often being
I've
an
only
attorney...
got 30 seconds.
Being an attorney can be a long role and it can involve many years of responsibility. You want to consider whether you have the time, the energy, and the skills to be able to make decisions for someone else. And if in doubt, ask a lawyer. We'll give you the full answer.
Look, I'm sorry, we have run out of time. I've got to get the news at 1 o'clock, but thank you, Jason and Helen, for being with us today. And we look forward to seeing somebody on the second Tuesday of be October then, won't it?
Thanks, Alan. We've loved being here. Thank you for having us.
Well, I hope we didn't frighten you off, Helen.
No, definitely didn't.
See you. Thanks, Jason.
Thank you, Alan.
Bye.
Bye.